Rogues Gallery Uncovered. Bad behaviour in period costume. A non-judgmental ransacking of the scandalous lives of history's greatest libertines, Lotharios, and complete bastards. This podcast contains very adult themes and a touch of colourful language. It's actually about a psychotically violent buccaneer and his equally rabid crew, so if you are expecting Jack Sparrow, you're going to be in for a hell of a shock. Pirate, cannibal, bastard. Tearing the heart out of the Spanish Main with the 17th century's most brutally unhinged pirate, François L'Ollonais. The following tale is written in the present tense of the period in which it's set, and as such may contain attitudes and opinions of the protagonists and their times which would today be considered unacceptable. As I'm not a violent and degenerate 17th century pirate who enjoys inflicting pain and suffering, those attitudes and opinions are, and I must stress this, obviously not mine. Tortuga, 1668. I'm a buccaneer. Port scum. I'll fuck your horse, skin your grandmother, and sell your babies into slavery for the price of a drink. But even I thought twice before signing on with him. I'm a bad man, no argument. But he was evil, an insane, bloodthirsty maniac. Why, I've seen him bind a rope around a man's forehead and then slowly tighten it until his eyes popped out of his face. And that was a kindness. When all said and done, though, he was fair to his crew. He did love the Lord, and he made us a fucking fortune in loot. So, raise your blackjacks, lads, and drink to the most vicious bastard ever to sail between Port Royal and Satan's Crack. François L'Ollonais. Now, like a lot of us, when he first came to the Main, back in the 50s, he was little more than a slave. They call it being an indentured servant. I call it sweltering, back-breaking toil on a Martinique sugar plantation. Thing was, though, it was all legal. Born Jean-David Nou in the French town of Les Sables d'Olon, he grew up in abject poverty, before being sold, let's be honest, to the plantation owner at the age of only 15. No wonder he was a bit pissed off. In return for L'Ollonais' agreement to serve him in any capacity that he saw fit, the plantation owner would have paid L'Ollonais' fare from France and supplied all of his food and lodgings. He was probably quite generous with a whip as well. The good news was, though, that after 7 years of service, L'Ollonais was then free to go and make his way in the world however he chose. Now, most indentured servants stayed on the island and became farmers. But after 7 years of that hell, L'Ollonais was in no mood to till the soil. He bared his arse at honest work and travelled instead to the Isle of Hispaniola, where he lived for a time with a gang of animal skin-wearing French vagabonds known as boucaniers. His days were mostly spent hunting pigs and cattle, then slicing thin strips of meat from the corpses and smoking it over an open fire. L'Ollonais came to the conclusion that if he did the same thing only to Spaniards, it might not only be much more enjoyable, it could also make him a tiny profit. So he went privateering. Now, a privateer is not a pirate. He's better than that. He has an official letter of marque on behalf of the French government and is legally entitled to plunder Spanish shipping whenever France and Spain are at war, or at the very least, on bad terms. We are not common thieves. Unless there's no war, of course, and then we go on account and work for ourselves. As common thieves. Fortunately, when L'Ollonais signed up, France and Spain were at each other's throats, so privateer captains were eager to recruit brutal and enthusiastic crewmen. And there was no one more enthusiastic or brutal than François L'Ollonais. In fact, such was his obvious effectiveness at harrying and slaughter It wasn't long before the governor of Tortuga gave him a ship of his own. As a captain, Lolonais was surprisingly pious, inviting a priest on board before he sailed in order to bless the crew. When a loudmouthed sailor played the zany, though, and interrupted the blessing with a joke, Lolonais shot him and then tipped his body into the sea. If you were one of his captives, though, well, he was far less forgiving. The best you could expect would be to have pieces of your flesh randomly sliced from your body before having your tongue cut out and your hands and feet chopped off. Afterwards, he'd lick the blood from his sword so all could see that he was indeed a devil in human form. His satanic reputation went before him, and Spanish sailors who faced his ship in battle often chose to throw themselves into the shark-infested ocean rather than be captured by him. Lolonais may have been a mad dog, no question, but he was far from stupid. Once, his ship went down in a storm off the coast of Mexico, and his crew were just celebrating their good fortune at having survived, when Spanish soldiers hiding in the undergrowth delivered a hail of musket fire and killed most of them on the beach. Wounded, but still alive, Lolonais smeared himself with blood, sand, and his comrades' spilled entrails, and then wriggled beneath their twitching bodies to avoid capture. He then persuaded a couple of slaves to steal a canoe and row him back to Tortuga, where he was immediately given another ship. The Spanish would soon come to rue their murderous victory, as it fanned the flames of Lolonais' hate for them into a raging, insane inferno. He certainly looked ready to kill every last one of them when me and the rest of the new lads signed articles for his next voyage. Lolonais had decided to attack and rob an entire Cuban village called De Los Cayos. Merchantmen, you see, were now not a rich enough prize. I remember, we dropped anchor at the mouth of a river linking the village to the sea. At the sight of us, the villagers wailed in terror and hurriedly sent off a messenger to Havana asking for help. By the time they'd received a reply, though, we'd completely torn their village apart. When he got their message, the governor of Havana dispatched a warship with strict instructions to kill all of us, save Lolonais, who was to be returned in chains. The ship even had its own hangman, to execute all of us on the spot. However, this was not to be. We sailed upriver in two canoes and attacked the warship as it lay at anchor, taking control of it at the point of a cutlass. In a blind rage, Lolonais then had all the survivors mustered on deck and beheaded. I did for two of them myself with a boarding axe. The hangman begged for his life, which gave us all a laugh, saying he was just doing his job. Lolonais promised him that he'd be spared if he revealed all that he knew about the Spanish plans to capture him. When the hangman had babbled all that he knew, Lolonais then told him that the promise was bollocks and chopped his head off anyway. You should have seen his face, lying there in the scuppers where it had rolled. A lone survivor was sent back to Havana with a personal message from Lolonais. "I shall never henceforth give quarter to any Spaniard whatsoever." The bastard had hardly been merciful before. I almost felt sorry for the next Don to fall into his hands. Back in Tortuga, Lolonais gave notice that he was planning his boldest raid to date, sacking the wealthy town of Maracaibo. We were all so lustful for gold, 600 of us agreed to join him. Even the mayor of Tortuga, an ex-pirate, came out of retirement. It was a very successful voyage for everyone. Unless, of course, you lived in Maracaibo. First, we took brutal control of its only defensive fort. So the terrified people of the town fled further upriver and into the jungle. When we eventually got to Maracaibo, it was all but deserted, so we moved into its best houses and had a fine time. We drank the place dry, fucked whatever we could find, and smashed everything else to pieces. When we got bored with all of that, we set the town on fire. The only thing we couldn't get our hands on was the gold. The atmosphere was like a carnival once we learned where they'd gone. Laughing and toasting each other, we followed them upriver and then sacked that town as well. Anyone who didn't tell us where their money was hidden had a knotted rope tied around their heads and slowly tightened until their eyeballs popped out. Woolding, Lolonay called it. Or we burnt them alive. We got an awful lot of coin that way. To get a little more, we then held the entire population under threat of massacre and demanded that the Spanish pay us a ransom, which, of course, they did. We sailed away with 260,000 pieces of eight, precious stones, slaves, and happy memories.
Yeah!
We thought Lolonay was a fine fellow and called him Fleur de Espanols, Scourge of the Spanish. He liked that. But such is the life of a privateer. Once we'd pissed and spunked our shares away in the taverns of Tortuga, we all needed to set sail again. And there was no end of volunteers for Lolonay's next voyage. The plan was to sail to Honduras and make our way inland until we got to San Pedro, which we would strip of valuables before marching back. Unfortunately, this one didn't go so well. After we decimated the coastal town of Puerto Cavallo, the bastard Spanish ambushed us on the way to San Pedro, and we were completely routed. A few of us got away, but, fueled by gold and vengeance, were determined to carry on. We captured a couple of Spanish stragglers, and Lolonay, who was in a particularly deranged mood, told them to reveal a safe route past the troops. They refused. Brave lads. Lolonay drew his cutlass and sliced open the chest of one of the Spaniards. Then, thrusting his hands into the steaming wound, he pulled out the still beating heart and began gnawing on it with his teeth, like some kind of wild animal. We all stood rooted to the spot in shock and fear. God knows what the other captives thought. Lolonay snarled that if they didn't tell him what he wanted to know, they'd be served in the same way. Well, they told us all right. But in the end, it didn't do us any good. The guards at San Pedro fought us off bravely, and we were forced to retreat back to our ship. Now, I thought things couldn't have gotten any worse, but we had still to completely sup our fill from the shitty bilge flagon of misfortune. We were empty-handed and defeated. Many of us were dead or bleeding their life away into the scuppers. Then, as if things weren't bad enough, the ship ran aground on some fly-blown stretch of the Panama coast. Marooned, with no food or water, we picked up what weapons we could find and began the long walk in search of a friendly village. And that's when we were attacked. A war party of natives from a tribe called the Kuna appeared like phantoms from the jungle. Before we could draw our blades or bring muskets to our shoulders, they'd run most of us through with their spears. Those of us that remained were captured. And as the savages started to build a bonfire, I knew that it would take some truly honeyed words to convince them that we offered no harm and should be left alone. His face a mask of fury, Lolonay strode forward to begin negotiations. Now, I've no idea what the captain said. Debate was never one of his talents, but I suspect the response that he got wasn't the one that he was looking for. The savages literally tore him, screaming limb from limb, casting each gobbet of flesh into the fire. And when all was consumed and reduced to ash, they gathered it into their hands and threw it wildly into the air. Even though I was tied to a tree, expecting at any moment to join him, I couldn't help but smile. The scourge of the Spanish, who cut out tongues, ate beating hearts, and squeezed out eyeballs, was himself ripped to pieces and burnt to a crisp by a bunch of howling savages. Had he still been able, Lolonay would have laughed long and loud at that. Because he was insane, obviously. As we leave Lolonay, ripped to pieces and burnt to a crisp, it's pretty safe to say that his story ends here. His career on the high seas ended violently at the age of around 39, which came as no surprise to anybody. It's said that the only thing left of him after the natives had finished with him was a golden tooth, which was found 50 years later by another pirate, who no doubt tried to flog it. Now, try as I might, I haven't been able to track down what happened to the surviving members of his crew, who must have survived in order for the story of his grisly end to have been revealed. If any of you are pirate fans, or fancy doing a bit of web ferreting on my behalf and can clear up the mystery, I'd be fascinated to know what became of them. I'm definitely going to feature more scoundrels of the high seas in upcoming episodes, as, let's face it, you can't get much more roguish than pirates. But it's the insane and violent ones that are my favourites, as they're always so much fun to talk about. And there are so many to choose from. So, by way of a little experiment, I'll put our next Barmy Buccaneer to the vote. Email me at simon@roguesgalleryonline.com. You'll find the address in the show notes. And let me know which of these three buccaneering beauties you'd like me to feature in my next pirate-related episode. Number 1. Charles Gibbs. An American pirate of the early 1800s, so pretty late in pirate years. He's said to have killed over 400 people, and once cut the limbs off one of his rivals, one by one, while he was still alive. Charming. Number 2. Ned Lowe. Now, sneaky Ned would pretend to be friendly using a false flag, and then ransack your ship and set fire to your fingers. He once cut off some bloke's lips, cooked them, and then fed them back to him, and was famous for tying a cook that he'd captured to a mast and then setting him on fire because he thought he looked greasy and would burn well. Or 3. Daniel Mombar, another hater of all things Spanish. He was a 17th century Frenchman who got his jollies by removing the intestines of anybody who displeased him, while of course they were still alive, then nailing them to a nearby tree, and then beating them up with a burning log. So, which of those three pirates would you like me to feature next? Limb-hacking Gibbs, lip-cooking Lowe, or log-beating Montbar? Let me know, simon@roguesgalleryonline.com. The address, as I said, is in the show notes. Or, of course, you can visit roguesgalleryuncovered.com. I had a message from Edward recently, hello Edward, asking me about getting a currency converter on the online store on the website. I'm in the process of sorting that out right now, Edward, but as with so much to do with tech, or at least my relationship with tech, it should be simple and straightforward, but actually isn't. Believe me, Edward, I am working on it. There also should be another newsletter coming out soon, so if you've signed up to becoming a lovable rogue, keep an eye on your inbox over the next week or so. Next time on Rogues Gallery Uncovered. You name it, I've done it. Sexual exploration, spying for Her Majesty, the Crimean War, a very big moustache, and every page of the Kama Sutra, with the 19th century's busiest man, Sir Richard Francis Burton. Don't forget to vote in the Insane Pirate Poll, and if you can, tell your friends or social media acquaintances about the podcast, as it would be very, very much appreciated. Share the love, that's what I say. I've been a bit self-effacing when it comes to telling people about Rogues Gallery recently, and there's been a two-week break because I've been really, really busy, but I can feel a promotional blitz coming on, so look out for renewed activity on any social media platform that you care to name, with the possible exception of OnlyFans. For now. And with that grim thought putting me off my tee, I'll beat a swift retreat. Take care, have a great week, and I'll see you yesterday.